This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The movie Little Miss Sunshine has gotten the reaction every independent filmmaker dreams of. When it was shown at Sundance 1 year ago, it didn't even have a distributor. Now it's a big hit and has 4 Oscar nominations, Best Picture, Best Screenplay, and Best Supporting Actor and Actress. My guests are the screenwriter, Michael Arndt. This is his first film. And the film's 2 directors, Valerie Faris and Jonathan Dayton, who are married. Faris and Dayton have made many music videos and TV commercials and 1 music documentary. Little Miss Sunshine is a kind of road trip movie in which a dysfunctional family in a dysfunctional VW bus travels to a children's beauty pageant that their daughter Olive has entered. Here's a scene from the beginning of the film. The whole family is sitting around the dinner table. Olive and her teenage brother, played by Abigail Breslin and Paul Dano, their parents, played by Greg Kinnear and Toni Collette, their grandfather, played by Alan Arkin, and their uncle, played by Steve Carell. The uncle has come to live with the family after his failed suicide attempt. Olive wants to know why her uncle was just in the hospital.
How did it happen?
How did what happen?
Your accident.
Hi.
Oh, no. It's okay. Unless you object.
No, I'm pro-honesty here. I just think, you know, it's up to you.
Be my guest.
Olive, Uncle Frank didn't really have an accident. What happened was he tried to kill himself.
You did? Why?
I'm sorry. I don't think this is an appropriate conversation. Honey, let's let Uncle Frank finish his dinner, okay? Shh.
Why did you want to kill yourself?
No, don't answer the question, Frank.
Richard.
Don't answer it.
Richard.
He's not going to answer the question, Frank.
I wanted
Richard.
To kill myself.
Don't listen to him.
Because I was
sick.
Very
He's
unhappy.
A sick man. He's a sick in his head man.
Richard.
I'm sorry. I don't think it's an appropriate conversation for a 7-year-old.
Well, she's going to find out anyway.
Oh, okay.
Go on, Frank.
Why were you unhappy?
Well, there were a lot of reasons. Mainly, though, I fell in love with someone who didn't love me back.
Who?
One of my grad students. I was very much in love with him.
Him? It was a boy? You fell in love with the boy?
Yes, I did. Very much so.
That's silly.
You're right. It was silly. It was very, very silly.
There's another word for it.
Dad.
Michael, you wrote Little Miss Sunshine. What was the first part of the story that came to you?
Well, the first part of the story was, it was actually the ending, because I had, you know, tried writing a couple of other scripts, and they had ended sort of badly. They had ended with everybody getting killed at the end, and they were just big downers. And I decided, you know, nobody wants to watch a movie, you know, that's such a huge downer. And I decided the next script that I was going to write was going to have an ending that would just be unbelievably wonderful. So I was really just looking for a great ending. I was looking for something that would just wildly exceed your expectations. And I remember I was just sitting and watching, you know, clips of a child beauty pageant on TV, and there were all these little skinny blonde girls up there. And I just thought to myself, you know, wouldn't it be great if a little chubby girl got up there and you thought it was going to be this total disaster? You thought she'd be, you know, just humiliated. But instead, she just, you know, started dancing and rocked the house and blew everybody away. And I was pretty sure that that would be a good ending. So, having, you know, found my ending, it was really a matter of sort of reverse engineering the story and figuring out, you know, who is this little girl? What is this pageant that she's at? Who is her family? How does she get there?
Who is her family? You came up with some really interesting answers to that question. So I'm going to ask you to say a couple of words about, like, a few short words about a couple of the characters. Let's start with the girl's father, played by Greg Kinnear. He's a guy trying to sell his motivational self-help plan, Refuse to Lose.
Right,
but he can't even succeed in finding a publisher.
Yeah, he's really sort of the main satirical target of the movie. I just thought, you know, it was actually in a phone call with my brother, and I was just talking about how, you know, the funny thing about families is that they can be related to each other by blood, but otherwise have nothing in common with each other. And I just started riffing with my brother about, you know, wouldn't it be funny if there was a family and, like, the dad was this failed motivational speaker, and, you know, you had this uncle who was this highbrow academic, and, you know, the dad was this, the grandfather was this sort of profane, you know, say anything kind of guy. And, you know, I was just making up these characters, and that those two ideas really connected. It was the little girl, you know, wanting to be a beauty queen, and then this crazy family, you know, that was going to, you know, be put, you know, sent on a road trip.
one more character I'm going to ask you about, and this is the character played by Steve Carell. He's the uncle of the girl who wants to be in the beauty pageant, and he's moved in with his family because after his suicide attempt, the doctors think it's unsafe for him to be alone. So tell us about the inspiration for this character.
Well, my brother's an academic. I have two brothers, actually, who are professors. And the world of academia is, to me, just sort of an inherently sort of amusing place because it is very removed to a degree from the real world. And, you know, there's the old joke that the fights in academia are especially bitter because the stakes are so low. And I just thought that he was a great counterpoint. You know, Richard Hoover, the dad, is this sort of lowbrow version of self-improvement, and Uncle Frank really is his sort of highbrow counterpart. I mean, he is an aspirational figure also, but I just thought the tension between sort of lowbrow and highbrow would be very funny. And then in terms of making it being Proust, I remember my brother, who is a professor.
We mention that he sees himself as America's foremost Proust scholar?
Yeah, he's the number one Proust scholar in America, exactly. My brother teaches Proust. He's a literature professor. And we were talking on the phone, and he mentioned this little thing that Proust has at the end of In Search of Lost Time, that the happy years are the wasted years, and the years that are most valuable in your life are the ones in which you're unhappy. And I thought that was such a great thing to have that character say, especially to Dwayne at the end of the movie, that I thought, well, the only way you're going to buy it coming out of his mouth would be to make him, you know, an expert in Proust.
Well, Jonathan Dayton, Valerie Faris, how did you get a hold of Michael's screenplay for Little Miss Sunshine?
We have two producers that we've known for a while, Albert Berger and Ron Yerxa, gave us the script. And actually, when they gave it to us, they said, you know, it's about a family, a dysfunctional family that goes on a road trip to take their daughter to a child beauty pageant. And when we heard that description, we thought, I don't really think that's something we'd want to do, you know. So we didn't actually read it right away.
But then I remember Val picked it up and was reading it in the other room, and I heard her laughing.
Which never happens.
Yeah. To anyone when they usually read a screenplay, particularly Val. And so I read it, and she kind of kept quiet, and we both just loved it. And
I remember Jonathan in the other room reading it and laughing out loud. So, I mean, it really was just the first time we had read a script where we felt like we had to make the movie. There was no choice. We were so in love with it. We just hadn't read anything that we liked so much.
Well, you put your finger on a problem. You know, the movie was described to you as like a road trip movie about a dysfunctional family headed to a beauty pageant. And you didn't think you wanted to make that movie. So, Michael, let me ask you, how do you wish the movie had been initially described to them?
Yeah, no, I it was a problem from the very beginning for me. I always thought that this was the least marketable film of all time. And I actually, you know, I had the story in my head for years and years and just sort of carried it around and didn't do anything with it just because I thought it was such a small movie and such a sort of nothing sort of unsexy premise. And I thought, you know, who's going to want to sit in a VW bus and watch this family bicker with each other? But I finally just decided, well, I'm going to write this just to get it out of my head. You know, I'd spent time working as a script reader, so I'd read hundreds and hundreds of screenplays. And I was very determined that by the time that I sent the script out, it would feel finished. It would feel like a real movie because that's, as a reader, that's the rarest thing to happen is you read a script, you turn the last page, and you say, I see that movie. So I'm very, very glad that Jonathan and Valerie had that reaction.
Did you do anything on the first page to make sure that people read to page 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 since you'd been a reader and you probably put down a lot of scripts after the first page?
I think that a mistake that a lot of comedies make, and I saw this over and over again, is that they try to be funny right away. I know it sounds sort of like a contradiction, but I think the problem with most comedies is that they're not serious enough. And if you start high on a comedy, if you have Mr. Wacky wake up and, you know, he goes to his wacky job and he meets his wacky girlfriend and all these wacky things happen, you sort of don't have anywhere else to go from there. You can't go, you know, if you start high, you can't go up. So I was really determined, you know, to introduce each of these, start very low, very quiet, very subdued, and introduce each of these characters one, you know, one at a time and just, you know, hopefully, in the first 10 pages, just get you to buy the reality of the situation. I think that's something that most scripts don't spend enough time doing is just setting up the world, having you enter into this world and sort of explore it and just buy the reality of the situation. So I actually held off, you know, for the first 10 or 15 pages on a lot of the comedy and let it, you know, let the readers or let the audience get to know the characters first and then start mining the interactions of the characters for humor. So
in directing the film, did you contribute any of your own dysfunctional family moments to the story?
Well, it's funny. The script was so well realized that it, you know, it was not so much adding things in the script, but I think just
relating to it.
Yeah, I mean, we have three children. You know, it took us a long time to get the film made, and there were so many times along the way where we'd go, oh, my God, this is a Little Miss Sunshine moment.
Yeah, like one of our kids would have a fit and run out of the van, our van, and refuse to get back in the car, and we'd be late for school, and, you know, we were so tired of feeling like, God, we're living this script, but when do we get the chance to make it?
Did you go to beauty pageants to see what they're like from the inside?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was very important to us to not make fun of the pageant world, that, you know, we went to these pageants and we wanted to make sure that they were accurate and ideally, and we were able to achieve this, we were able to cast real pageant kids in the film. So everyone you see in the movie is from the pageant world, and most of them are doing their own acts, you know,
their own hair and makeup, and they've got their own costumes.
It was a low-budget movie, so it was great to be able to get, you know, these acts ready to go.
What about their mothers? Were their mothers real?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a package deal. And, you know, I mean, also, the thing is that, you know, initially there was a desire to shoot this film in Canada, and we really fought that because the Canadians, to their credit, don't have a kid pageant scene. And you know, pageant kids start training at 6 months often. And they, you know, so when they're, by the time they're 8 or 9, you know, they've been doing this for, you know, many years. And you can't teach a kid who doesn't know this world how to move
behave
like that
it.
And for that matter, how to grow. You know, these girls have been growing their hair so that it can get in those big shapes. And it's just not something that can be done, you know, quickly.
Valerie, was there ever a moment when you were young, when you dreamed of being Miss America or something, that helped you, like, relate to the character of Olivia in the movie who wants to be in the beauty pageant?
You mean Olive.
Olive. Dude. I mean Olive. Dude, yes, yeah. Thank you.
That's the French version, or yeah. I don't know. I never dreamed of being Miss America or really in a beauty pageant, but the one thing that I did relate to about the character of Olive was when she's doing her dance. I remember when I was like 6 years old and running around in my living room and my parents sitting on the couch watching me, and I probably was just, you know, running through the room and jumping in the air and doing spins, but I remember thinking that I was doing this magnificent dance. And I think I totally related to that age where you still have the fantasy in your head of what you're doing, and it's not, you know, it doesn't really matter what you're actually doing. It's the feeling you have as you're doing it, and that she believed that she was great and that she was a, you know, great dancer. And I just loved that she still had that fantasy life. And, you know,
I think that's what the other members of the family want to protect too, is that they see that this is something that means so much to her, and whether she's great at it or not, it's something that she feels so passionately about. And many of the family members have all lost something that has meant something to them, so, you know, she is this last stand, you know.
And I think that I have to say in the movie, I think that Abigail Breslin does such a good job of showing the sort of dawning consciousness that Olive has, you know, that she starts out very innocent and she starts out thinking that she's going to be great and she's so happy she won and she's going to go to this contest and hopefully win. And in the course of the movie, you see, you know, this little 8-year-old girl, you know, start to look at herself the way other people look at her. And it is this sort of very melancholy transition this character makes. And I just think Abigail as an actress just captured that so, so perfectly.
We're talking about Little Miss Sunshine with the film's screenwriter, Michael Arndt, and directors, Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris. Here's another scene from the film. The whole family is in the car, driving daughter Olive to her beauty pageant. Richard, played by Greg Kinnear, is telling his brother-in-law, Frank, played by Steve Carell, about his plan to get his self-help book published.
So finally, I'm just sitting there, and I decide, you know, this is Stan Grossman. What the hell? And I start pitching him the 9 steps, and about, I don't know, 2 minutes in, he stops me. He says, I can sell this.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and this is the guy who knows how to do it, you know? You start with a book, and then you do a media tour, corporate events, DVD, VHS series. I mean, there's a whole fascinating science into how you roll these things out.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's in Scottsdale right now, you know, building the buzz and kind of getting the whole hype thing going. He's doing what the pros call a ticking clock auction.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, and I can detect that note of sarcasm there, Frank.
What sarcasm? I didn't hear it.
But I want you to know something. I feel sorry for you.
You do? Good.
Yeah, I do. Because sarcasm is the refuge of losers.
It is? Really?
Yep. Sarcasm is losers trying to bring winners down to their level, and that's step 4 in the program.
Wow, Richard, you really opened my eyes to what a loser I am. How much do I owe you for those pearls of
wisdom? That one's on the house, buddy.
It is?
Yeah, it's okay, on the house.
Guys,
that's on the house.
Hey,
wow.
Guys,
that was
great.
For free.
No charge.
Stop You're
it.
Not
no
going to charge.
Stop it.
There's a scene in the movie where, you know, like, they're on this, like, long trip in their VW bus, like, the whole family getting the girl to the beauty pageant, and because of all the mishaps they have along the way, they're really late. But, you know, although this is a road trip movie in some ways, the car is dysfunctional, too. It's not just the people, it's the car.
Right,
and,
right.
And it, you know, it's a VW van, a VW bus, and because the clutch is broken, they have to, like, push it into second gear in order to get it started. And this is the kind of scene that would seem really, like, silly and improbable to me had it not been for the fact that I, many years ago, made several trips in a van that had exactly the same problem.
Oh,
actually
really?
Had to run and push it and then pop it into second gear.
Right, right.
And so I guess I just found it interesting that something that would have struck me as completely improbable, I actually witnessed firsthand. So Michael, can you talk about coming up with the idea for this kind of van, you know, for a van with that problem?
Yeah, it was very easy, actually, to come up with the that idea because my family had a VW van when I was a kid, and pretty much everything that happens in the movie happened to our van. So it was the door coming off, the horn getting stuck. We actually had the wheel come off, you know, while we were driving, which was in the script. It didn't quite make it into the movie. And then, of course, having the clutch give out. And we actually, you know, my family and I drove 600 miles in a VW bus with a broken clutch, and we had to, you know, just push it every time to get it started. It could start up in third gear, and then my dad was able to shift into fourth without using the clutch. So it was people ask me, you know, is the movie autobiographical? And I say, well, the only thing that's really autobiographical is the car.
Abigail Breslin, the young actress who plays Olive in the movie, was nominated for a Golden Globe and is now nominated for a Supporting Actress Award for an Oscar. How did you find her? It must be very difficult to cast a child in a role because, first of all, they don't have the kind of experience and they haven't made that many movies. At least I assume she hadn't. Second of all, I don't know if the audition process is as easy to do or as easy to interpret for you as it would be for the process auditioning an adult.
Well, yeah, I mean, after reading the script, our first concern was how do we find Olive? Because if you don't have a credible Olive, you just don't have a movie. So the first thing we did was get seed money to start the search. And we actually looked in every English-speaking country in the world. I mean, we did casting sessions in Australia and in the UK and across America, and we found only one person who we thought could do it, and it was Abigail. And at the time, she was 6 years old, but it took so long to get the movie made that she actually sort of grew to an ideal age when we eventually shot the movie.
But even at six, her audition was pretty incredible. I mean, she had these lines. At 6 years old, she seemed to understand the scene with Grandpa. She really, you know, she did it great at that age. But I think, you know, the thing with Abigail, she had, by the time we worked with her, she was nine, and she'd already done, I think, four movies. So she also had more experience making movies than we did. And she just was, you know, I think that does make a difference so that they're not kind of shell-shocked when they get onto the set. And, you know, she, if you we watched her other films and we watched her appearances on the Jay Leno show, and that was in some ways what completely sold us on her, was watching her with Jay Leno, because she sat on that show and instead of kind of playing to the audience, she was completely engaged in her conversation with Leno. And I think that's what's sort of exceptional about her, is that she's an incredible listener. And, you know, even if she's not talking in a scene, she's completely engaged. And that's pretty rare for a kid.
It took years for Little Miss Sunshine to get made. Why was it so difficult?
Well, I mean, there were many reasons. I think, as we talked about earlier, it's a hard film to describe. And I think anytime people go to make a movie, they immediately start thinking about, well, how are we going to sell this? And, you know, how can it be simplified, you know, to a tagline or a poster?
Or a star vehicle. You know,
yeah. And because it was a true ensemble film, you know, studios tend to be nervous about ensemble pictures because they can't put the face of one star or two stars on the poster. And you know, in the past, ensemble films haven't sold so well. So there were a lot of strikes against it. And then I think, finally, you know, the whole notion of a dysfunctional family comedy was something that I think people felt was tired. Now, I think if people look closely, obviously, this was a fresh treatment of that subject. But on the surface, it felt like territory we'd all been through.
And I think also at the same time, it was it's what they call in Hollywood an execution-dependent film, which means that it really had to, you know, you really had to sort of thread the needle or hit the bullseye for it to really work. And if you had had, you know, just one weak link in the chain, like if you had miscast Olive, for example, you know, or if you had shot poorly the final dance number, then the whole movie wouldn't work. It would have been a disaster. So I think people were just always nervous about the fact that, you know, I was a first-time writer, John Avell were first-time directors, and sort of, you know, was this really, you know, people tended to really like the script, but, you know, there was always the question was, you know, was that going to be able to translate onto the screen?
Steve Carell wasn't that well known yet when you cast him in the movie. It was before 40-Year-Old Virgin was released. Did the ability to get a good distributor or to raise money for the film change when he became more famous?
It certainly didn't hurt us. But it's funny because I think when we cast him, he was probably the one that, you know, everyone was sort of, he was the biggest question mark in a way, although we didn't feel that because we met him. We'd seen a couple episodes of The Office. It hadn't started airing yet, but we saw him in The Office. We've loved his work in all the films that he's done and on the Jon Stewart show. So, and then meeting him, we just thought he gets this character so thoroughly, and we agreed in kind of the way we were going to approach the film. So we felt totally confident with him, but I think in some ways he may have been considered the biggest risk we were taking.
But the film, you know, we had finished shooting the film when The 40-Year-Old Virgin came out, and it wasn't really till Sundance and where the film was offered for sale that Steve's, rising star really came in handy.
I remember Steve on the set, he would come, you know, to act on the set, but then he would say, oh, we had a test screening of The 40-Year-Old Virgin last night, and you know, I really think it went well, but I shouldn't say that. You know, he's such a modest guy, but, you know, we were hearing, you know, that he was getting great scores.
Jonathan, Valerie, you're a husband and wife, and you're a directing team, so how did you maintain your sense of unity to the actors when making the movie? Did they talk with both of you each time they had a question, or did you say, well, let me get back to my spouse and then, or my co-director, and then we'll get back to you as a team and give you the answer?
Well, it happened so many different ways, but, you know, we had 3 years to prepare for this. We actually workshopped five different scenes from the movie, and with other actors. And so we had seen parts of the film up and running. So we had a pretty good understanding of what we wanted. We even acted out some of the scenes in our garage with just the two of us so that we knew what we were asking of the actors. We weren't performing very well, but we at least knew the feelings that we were going for. So many times we had talked about so much that we knew what the
The other one would say.
Yeah, we knew the collective stand on most issues. But, you know, there were probably some times where we'd say, well, let me just talk to Valerie and we'll come back to you. Or, you know, usually...
Or we'd both be there. I mean, a lot of times when there's something, you know, really important or there's something that you're trying to work out, the two of us would be there with the actor. And then it would be a discussion among the three of us. So it's funny how rarely that does come up where somebody says, you know, what about this? And then one of us has to go and check with the other.
Yeah.
It's very organic, and I don't really know exactly how it works or how to describe it, except that we've never had anybody on the set say, you know, I can't talk to two directors. Not yet, anyway.
Valerie, you were a student of dance before becoming a filmmaker, and you've done a lot of rock videos in which I assume there's some dancing. I know that you've both directed Gap and Target commercials. Have you done ones in which there's dancing?
Well, we have shot dance a lot. We're actually doing some Gap commercials coming up that are dance duos. But I've always loved, I still love dance, and I think good movies are, when you see a great movie, the movement of the characters is so important. So I think of a lot of things as dance, even if it's not strictly dance, but just movement.
Pushing the van was really a dance sequence.
In what sense?
Well, just that they're all working together. It's just, I feel like when, I think physical, you know, physical comedy for one is something that I think both of us, all of us love. And I just think, you know, it's not, we're so kind of dialogue based today, and it's so nice to see. I think that's partly what works about that scene is that it's really physical. They're actually all doing, you know, the pushing and the running, and when they jump into the van, they're breathing hard. And you know, I think that translates on film, and just gets you involved as an audience. Movement does that.
Just one more question, Jonathan and Valerie. Which came first for you, being a directorial team or being a couple?
You want to guess?
Do I want to guess? No, I'm going to let you answer it.
No.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because we think that that's probably the secret behind why we work so well together is that we worked together for 6 years and then we started dating. So, you know, all the work habits were already established and we had respect for each other, which is a good way to start.
And we still do.
Yeah, we still do. But so many people say to us, I don't know how you work with your spouse. And, you know, my husband or my wife and I could never work together. And it's kind of funny to me because I think, well, how do you raise kids together or how do you live together? It almost sounds like you don't like each other. So, you know, we happen to like each other as well as respect each other.
I guess co-directing has helped in co-parenting.
Yeah.
You've already got a routine
Absolutely.
Together.
Yes. And I think it would be much harder to be married to a director. You know, they're just gone so much. So it's better that we're both gone or we're both there. And we actually aren't gone that much. We spend a lot of time at home.
Well, I want to congratulate all of you for the success of Little Miss Sunshine and for the Academy Award Best Picture nomination. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you.
Thanks.
Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris directed Little Miss Sunshine. Michael Arndt wrote the screenplay. The film is nominated for 4 Oscars, including Best Picture and Best Screenplay.